Imagine twin Earths, each the image of the verdant globe on which we live. Imagine these two worlds forever separated by a limbo of interdimensional space. Identical planets, evolving separately across the millennia, each witnessing the birth of man, then the dawn of civilization, and finally, the beginning of the age of superheroes. On one world we'll call Earth 2, the superheroes begin to arrive in the early part of the 20th century when a rocket ship brought the star child Kal-El to safety. Kal-El begins his career as Superman in the early days of World War II as the first of the great heroes. Soon he was joined by other heroes, and they joined forces to form the first super team in history, the Justice Society of America. Thus the two worlds knowingly coexist, one inhabited by the familiar Flash, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and other heroes of the Justice League, and the other Earth by the original superheroes. These are the legendary members of the Justice Society.
Welcome to Episode 7 of Earth 2 in the Bronze Age. Today we are looking at the story from Justice League of America number 102, And One of Us Must Die. Thanks for joining me today in this endeavor. As you know, if you've been listening, we're going to provide some context for the Bronze Age stories of Earth 2. And we started back with the Flash 123, the introduction of the multiple Earths concept in the DC Comics as a real thing, as something to be built upon and explored. And today we get even closer. This is the finale of the three-part reintroduction of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. Of course, this is an important story because the Star-Spangled Kid is a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory, and he plays a large role in the Bronze Age stories of Earth 2. And this is how he comes back. He's been missing, as have all the Seven Soldiers. So today we're going to finish up this three-part story, which also was part of the 100th issue celebration of the Justice League of America title, the original volume. It is this story started in issue 100, which you covered a couple episodes ago. And after today, we're finally going to get there. All-Star Comics number 58, when the Justice League got its own... The Justice Society got its own title again. Its own series for the first time in... At the time, it was 25 years since issue 57 of All-Star Comics in 1951. So... let's get going. Let's fire up that cosmic treadmill and get on over to what's going on Earth 2. Last issue, we saw both the Justice League and Justice Society seek out and find some of the missing heroes in the Seven Soldiers of Victory. They had their own foes to overcome, and meanwhile, Diana of Earth 1, Wonder Woman of Earth 1, was, when we left off, was about to run into some trouble at headquarters. I believe they're in the headquarters of the Justice Society on Earth 2. So let's turn the page here in our Crisis on Multiple Earths Volume 3 and see what we got going on. The cover is by Nick Carty for Justice League of America number 102, issue dated October 1972. As with the previous installments of this story, Len Wein is the writer, Dick Dillon is on pencils, Joe Giella is the inker, Ben Aona is on letters, and Julia Schwartz is the editor. Here we go. Concluding the monumental 100th anniversary adventure of the Justice League of America. It was going to be a party at first, but the interdimensional summons of Dr. Fate had changed that. Now it was a manhunt, a desperate quest that had led the members of the Justice League and Justice Society down the infinite corridors of time. The object of their search? The Seven Soldiers of Victory, long-lost champions who alone can save their planet from that awesome nebulous hand that holds the Earth. But the price of such success may prove most terrible indeed, and one of us must die. In a place beyond places he sits, this all-knowing entity named Oracle. He sits and he ponders and weighs the fate of the world. This Oracle character, unrelated to the later Oracle we know from Barbara Gordon, this enigmatic character has been leading the heroes of the Justice League's League and Society towards their missing heroes of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. A strange feeling this, for it has been long since Oracle last cared about the survival of a mere planet. But care I do, and I find this sensation pleasant, perhaps with good reason, for was it not I who sent Earth's boldest heroes on their journey through time and space? Indeed it was, but now I would know more of those who stayed behind. How, for instance, fares Diana Prince, she who was once called Wonder Woman? Well, not well, it seems, for she is beset by the Iron Hand, whose nebuloid namesake is the cause of the great quest, and she knows not her danger. So you recall that there's this giant hand holding the Earth in its grasp, and it's going to crush it. And Diana, on Earth 1 at this point, is still in her white jumpsuit era. So instead of having the powers of Wonder Woman, she just is a secret agent spy type. Nor did the other heroes who strive to protect their world, Green Lantern, Robin, Mr. Terrific. I could end their problems in an instant, but I am not bound, not to interfere. It is decided, man must make his own destiny, but if, on this bleak day, he falls in final defeat, a small part of Oracle shall die as well. And here we are, going to the next group of heroes trying to track down a missing member of the Seven Soldiers. And even as Oracle speaks, three of those destiny makers suddenly find themselves upon the side of a wooded hill. Green Arrow, Black Canary, and the incomparable Johnny Thunder. So you remember that last issue, they found the Golden Age Green Arrow, who was one of the Seven Soldiers, and he was lost. He was one of the lost members. And this Green Arrow is Earth 1 Green Arrow, and we have Black Canary, who is, at this point, still the Earth 2 Black Canary, who has crossed over to Earth 1, and Johnny Thunder. It's an interesting pairing here, because we have Green Arrow and Black Canary, who are supposedly in a relationship at this point, and Black Canary in the Golden Age originally appeared in Johnny Thunder's strip in Flash Comics. Green Arrow speaks first. Don't know where Oracle dumped us, but the man has taste. So I noticed, but we're still better start hunting for our... Eh? Great idea, Canary. You and me will go this way and meet up with Green Arrow later on. Hang on, Thunder. That's my lady you're bending. Your lady? I knew Black Canary for more years than you've got arrows. What? I've got news for you, Chauvinist. I happen to be my own lady, and I intend to see it stays that way. Huh? Ugh. If you want to go hero hunting, fine. But if you want to go play tug of war, find yourselves a new rope. Hey, maybe we don't have to hunt. Look over there. Smoke. Cautiously, the time-tossed trio follows the curling column of smoke until at last they come upon an Indian village. Well, at least we know where we are now, somewhere in the North American plains. Only question left is, who? Who are we searching for? Offhand, Green Arrow, I would say it was him. The vigilante! A prisoner! They're going to burn him at the stake! And so we have the vigilante, Greg Saunders, Golden Age vigilante, wrapped up or tied up with a number of Native Americans spear pointing at him. Too bad this ain't the movies, or the cavalry would be coming to the rescue by now. The cavalry hasn't been invented yet, Bright Eyes. Maybe not, G.A. I'll call my magic thunderbolt, and he can conjure up a cavalry for us. Say you. That's Johnny's magic hex word to get the thunderbolt to appear. The mystic word spoken, Johnny Thunder awaits the almost instantaneous appearance of his supernatural servant. But after several long minutes, the thunderbolt didn't show. That's never happened before. It was the first time for everything, pal. He probably got as tired of you as I have. Now come on, we got a cowboy to rescue. There is a faint rustle of the tree branches as the daring trio moves forward, and suddenly, we've been discovered. And so there's a number of Native Americans jumping out of the tree, knocking the trio out, and they all stand, or lay defeated. When they awaken, so, Whiteskins, you awaken at last. You are weak enemies indeed. Hate to disappoint you, Doc, but we came here in peace. That's right, we have no wish to harm you. You lie. I have spoken to the Buffalo Spirit, and he has told me you must die, or other Whiteskins will one day come to kill the buffalo and steal away our land. Gotta admit, you got a powerful argument, friend, but I still wish you'd reconsider. No, the spirits have spoken. When next the moon is full, you will die, as will die the other Whiteskin one tonight. And moments later, and now Greg Saunders, the vigilante, is tied to the stake, and he tries to talk him out of it. Still time to change your mind, hombre, I'm telling you. You got the wrong man. Silence, Whiteskin. We kill you only in our own defense. In that case, you don't mind if we happen to defend ourselves. Hey! Well, I'll be swaggered. I don't know who all you rannies are, but I never seen any happy to be anybody. Time for introductions later, Vig, after we get you out of here. Well then, why don't I lend you a hand? And the vigilante's ropes have been cut by an arrow, obviously from Green Arrow, and he's able to draw his pistols. Well then, these Jaspers are so primitive they don't even bother to take my irons. For several moments, the vigilante's man-made thunder splits the air until the sound is drowned out by a great thunder. Still, hey, it sounds like it's going to rain. I only wish it were, Johnny. Take a look over there. Buffalo headed this way. What are we going to do now? Funny you should ask that. And then the thunderbolt appears. Thunderbolt, where in places have you been? I called you hours ago. Sorry, pal, but it took me 1,000 years or so to find you. You are off the beaten path, you know. So tell me, what can I do for you? Those buffalo, you got to stop them. Your wish is my command, as soon as you say those two little magic words. But I can't talk. That witch man's magic dust has given me hiccups. Sorry, O ruler of the ridiculous. No passwords, no magic. Say, you idiot, do you want those monsters to trample us into corn mash? Do something. Them was the words, chief. The bemused thunderbolt studies the onrushing herd. Then with a casual wave of his hand, he turns them into butterflies. You gotta be kidding me. And with that, the stampeding buffalo are stopped, and the thunderbolt is able to take Johnny, Vigilante, Green Arrow, and Black Canary away. And they head back to where Oracle was bringing the rest of the heroes who had finished their missions. Meanwhile, centuries away, three more strangely garbed men hurtled through the misty sky, their eyes carefully scanning the prehistoric terrain below. Aquaman, Wildcat, and Green Lantern, and this is Hal Jordan, Green Lantern. Still no hint of where we ended up, Wildcat? Fray not, Aquaman. You can't tell one rock from another down here. Hey, it looks like there's more than a rambling rock garden below us. Cavemen. Cro-Magnon, from the looks of them. Well, at least you know when we are. 50,000 years in the past. Appears they've cornered some wild animal in that cave. That's no wild animal, Green Lantern. It's the Star-Spangled Kid. But as the dauntless trio swoops groundward to investigate, brace yourselves, we're going to splatter. When the hapless heroes regain their feet, what the heck happened to your power ring, Green Lantern? Forget to recharge it? No, it's just blasted yellow fog. The area is thick with it, and my ring is powerless against that particular color. Fellas, take a peek over there. Uh-oh. Without my ring to back us up, we're going to have to fight our way into that cave. Fight. That's my specialty. Get ready to follow my lead. If we can't go past these guys, we're going to go through them. A sudden motion from the shadows, and here comes somebody who wants to argue the point, Wildcat, and it'll be rough on anyone who disagrees with him. Well, I disagree with him, and I want to know his arguments stand up against cold, hard facts. Fact 1, this prehistoric Goliath moves like a week's supply of exhausted molasses. Fact 2, he's arguing with the ex-heavyweight champion of the wide world. I don't like to lose an argument. Hey, where's everybody going? I thought they wanted to fight. Okay, Wildcat, you made your point. Now suppose we start searching for the Star Spangled Kid. Why not? It's beginning to rain out here anyways. Moments later, within the Great Stone Chamber. So that's how the kid managed that illusion. A primitive projector made of quartz and scrap material. Ingenious, but where's the kid himself? Hiding in one of those side tunnels, I bet. You're probably right. The question is, why? We find the answer to that when we find the Star Spangled Kid. Checking this mage out could take forever. Let's each take a different tunnel and meet back here when we've made the rounds. Long minutes pass as the three adventurers scour the cavern's countless corridors. Until at last the Sea King spies, slipping in the shadows up ahead, the Star Spangled Kid. Who? Oh, thank the stars, a fellow human being. But how did you find me here? I'll explain that later. What I want to know is, why have you been hiding in this cave? To protect the future of the human race. I've got a terrible case of flu. If even one of those primitive ancestors of ours were to catch the disease for me and die, it could alter the course of history. Shh, that rumble noise sounds like a flood. And the cave is suddenly flooded. When it rains in this prehistoric world, it pours. With an instant, the raging torrent fills the rough-hewn chamber. The water's impact is not the kid colder than a penguin's nose. I better get him out of here before he drowns. Then come back for GL and Wildcat. Like a salmon returning to the spawning ground, the underwater wonder pits his mighty sinews against the surging, flooding tide. Difficult to make any headway against this current. For anyone else, it would be impossible. Hope my partners in peril can hold out till I can get them. When suddenly, what? A great green goldfish bowl, enclosing us in a bubble of air. Seems I underestimated my colleagues. Swiftly, the glowing globe maneuvers its way through the floodwaters, bringing Aquaman and the Star Spangled Kid into the company of Green Lantern. But you said the yellow fog disrupted your power ring. It did, but the driving rain washed the fog away. Hey, you found our bite-sized prize package. Then we're done. We've done all we set out here to do. All that remains now is for Oracle to bring us back again. Instantly, a great cloud of smoke swirls around the four strange figures, and they are gone. All right, coming up next, Chapter 3, but let's get a quick message from the Comics in Motion Network.
Who are they? Where did they come from? The Comics in Motion Network presents Classic Comics with Matthew B. Lloyd. Explore the golden age of comics. Learn where some of your favorite characters first appeared. Find out their origins, and perhaps you'll learn about some characters you've never heard of. Or comics you've never seen. Newspaper strips, like Terry and the Pirates, or the Golden Age Daredevil. Don't be surprised to find something from the Silver Age, or important moments in the history of comics. Comics in Motion Network. Found wherever your podcasts find you.
Hi, I'm Allison Shelton, writer and creator of the Indie Comic Reburn. You may have heard about us on Indie Comic Spotlight, thanks to Tony and Rhea. Reburn follows May, a superpowered woman who takes on the cult-like utopian society that ripped her life apart. Our comic picks up when she's ready to burn it all down. We're incredibly proud of our all-female team, myself, artist Elise McCall, editor Jessica Patel, colorist Hillary Jenkins, and letterer Joe McGill. Renowned comic writer and artist Kari Andrews said of Reburn, "It's an impressive debut, a violent, visceral, and emotion-fueled spectacle. A story you need to read right now." We agree. And we have hard copies and digital copies of issues 1 through 4 available on our website, reburncomic.com. That's Reburn Comic.com. Check it out.
Hello, listeners. This is Tony Farina from DC Comics News and an occasional guest on Comics in Motion. I'm pleased to announce a new show called Indie Comics Spotlight. Each week, my guests and I will be taking a deep dive into a current title or a classic graphic novel from a publisher other than the big two. Consider this show the best of the rest. My hope is that we'll bring new readers to independent comics and give old readers a chance to share their thoughts. Join me each week in the Comics in Motion feed in your favorite podcast catcher.
Welcome back. And here comes the Flash as Atana and the Red Tornado. Let us adjust the curtain of time and space and focus on three more of our century-spanning searchers as they step back onto the plane of reality. Wow, that was quite a ride. Where did Oracle deposit us? My relativity sensors indicate we've landed on a small Mediterranean island, Zatanna. In that case, it shouldn't take me more than a few seconds to check the island for our missing soldier. Wait here, and I'll be right back. What? And miss all the fun? Hang on, Flash, we're coming with you. Magic carpet appear. Zatanna summons a magic carpet with her backwards magic, but I have read it forwards for you, because it doesn't do any good to read it backwards. And a super speed scrutiny of the small isle reveals, look on the crest of the hill, the object of our quest. Right, Red Tornado, that's our boy. Speedy, hey Speedy, over here, you've got company. But as the boy Bowman moves forward, toward his three friendly pursuers, something's happened to him, Speedy has become a centaur. And true enough, Speedy is now a centaur with a white horse as the bottom portion of his body and his normal looking torso above. What sorcery could have caused such a... Heads up, Zatanna, or you may not live long enough to find out. Cease, who dares trespass upon the Isle of Aea? What? I am the sorceress, Circe, and these are my faithful servants. Of course, according to Greek legend, Circe had the power to turn ordinary men into hybrid animals. That's as you've done to Speedy. Quite correct, wench. She is far more manageable this way. What do you want here on Circe's Isle? We have come for him, sorceress, the centaur who stands beside you. Return him to his normal state, and we'll leave you in peace. Certainly, spawn of Mercury, if you want your friend's companionship so dearly, you shall have it, by joining him in my menagerie. Brace yourself, group, she's planning something tricky. Indeed I am. I've enchanted the young bowman's shafts. Should an arrow so much as touch you all, you shall become that which is most repugnant to you. She means it. Everyone scatter. Speedy can't hit all of us. And three twangs of a bow later, that glowing enchanted arrow, no matter what, how I dodge and weave it, follows right along behind me and starting to catch up. Better pour on the super speed. Flash is trying to escape Speedy's first arrow. Good Lord, my wife, Iris used me to call me the slowest man alive, and right now, and how right she is now. I've become half snail. The arrow got him, and now the Flash has turned into a snail on the back end. Well, half across the island, that brick wall I conjured up isn't slowing the arrow down. Unless I quickly come up with the proper spell, it'll be... Oh, too late. Zatanna, on her magic carpet, has been struck by an arrow. The arrow turned me into a hummingbird. To make matters worse, it's frozen my vocal cords. I can't utter a counteracting spell. For the third target, Speedy's arrow is a heat-seeking missile following me wherever I go. Eh? I see Flash's arrow has caught up to him. Got to help. But as the Red Tornado storms to Flash's side, the diversion let the magical arrow overtake me, hit me, give me a body of a mole. Welcome to the club, Reddy. Now you try spinning, and you'll drill yourself into the ground. A fitting fate, is it not, Fleet One? Seriously, why have you done this to us? We meant you no harm. No, you wanted my young centaur, and no one may touch what is Circe's with impunity. You shall remain as you are until you die, a fate not long in coming. Under my enchantment, you two shall battle unto death, as a lesson to others who would seek to annoy Circe. Can't help myself. Circe is forcing me to obey. It should be a splendid super-speed struggle, but that I could remain to witness it. But there are other matters that demand Circe's attention immediately. The sorceress gallops off into the distance, leaving behind two struggling victims of her magic, and one almost forgotten in the heat of the moment. Got to find a way to stop them before they kill each other. The winds they're creating are knocking me out like a ping-pong ball. wait a minute, that humming. My wings brought me at this incredible speed, create a sound. If I can control that noise, I might be able to duplicate the sound of my voice and counteract Cersei's spell. Desperately, the mistress of the occult experiments with her newly gained pinions, performing countless different maneuvers in an attempt to achieve a variety of sounds. Until at last, magic of Cersei, be gone. Thank the stars it's working. Flash and Red Tornado are returning to normal. Now that, I have to admit, is a wild resolution. That is crazy. And as Cersei's magic wears off, Zatanna herself, thanks for the handy net, Flash. It's difficult staying aloft without wings. So I noticed. Do me a favor, Zatanna. Next time you cancel an enchantment, make sure you're standing on the ground. Need I remind you we still have to rest Speedy to rescue? I haven't forgotten Tornado. In fact, I figured out how to do it. A short while later, in the gracious temple that is the island's sole structure, I've come back for my friend, Cersei, and this time I'm taking him. 'Tis you again, Scarlet One. You learn your lessons hard. For your insolence, I will turn you into a lowly earthworm. I wouldn't do that, Sorceress. His wife wouldn't like it. And I'll take your wand. You're too dangerous to have a loaded weapon. No! It cannot be. Why say that, Cersei, when it obviously is? Cersei, become Repelis. What? Paralyzed. Cersei, become paralyzed. I couldn't read that one backwards. At Zatanna's command, Cersei becomes motionless, and almost instantly, Speedy comes too. Where am I? What happened? Who are you? It's a long story, Speedy. We'll fill you in later. Right now, we have to dispose of Cersei. I've taken care of that, Flash. Without her wand, she is powerless, and Red Tornado breaks her wand in half. With her wand no more, Cersei's pets are regaining their true forms. There's nothing left to keep us here, except for the problem how to find our way back home. And suddenly, looks like Oracle solved that problem for us. We're fading out. Hey, what's going on? I don't understand any of this, says Speedy. You will, youngster, assuming we return to our world in time. In the hands of all-knowing Oracle, time is a celestial clay, to be sculpted as he sees fit. Now he folds the clay in upon itself, gathering the scattered edges, bringing the greatest assortment of super beings ever recorded to the Justice Society Sanctuary. And here we have the combined Justice League, Justice Society, and Seven Soldiers of Victory. All together. All president accounted for, says Superman. The Flash says, the Seven Soldiers of Victory, together once again. And Johnny Thunder follows up, but if the Seven Soldiers are all here, who is buried in the Unknown Soldier's tomb? Remember, we started out the story with the cover, who is buried in the Unknown Soldier's tomb. We'll turn back to the cover of that first issue right away to remind you that on that cover we have... Here lies the Unknown Soldier of Victory, and the members of the Society and the League paying their respects. So there is the mystery of who's the soldier in the tomb. We can answer that, says Mr. Terrific. Green Lantern, Robin, Mr. Terrific, where have you been? The top of the Himalayas where we discovered. No, friend, let me tell everyone what you found. The Crimson Avenger speaks up. The Unknown Soldier of Victory is my aid and companion, Wing. It was he who died to defeat the Nebula Man, and if there is any justice in this world, he was buried where he fell, with honors. He was indeed Crimson Avenger. Holy men from a nearby temple witnessed the battle and laid your friend to rest when it was over. He was a man as ever lived. You've a right to be proud of him. Nobody will live long enough to be proud unless we get to work rebuilding the weapon that Wing used to defeat the Nebula Man. You'll do nothing, friends, if you value your pretty lady's life. Who? Diana. And the Iron Hand, our old arch-enemy. But that Jasper is supposed to be dead. Not dead, Vigilante, merely damaged, with an Iron Hand as proof. An Iron Hand that shall scatter Diana Prince all over the countryside. If anyone here is so foolish as to make a threatening move towards me, and in case you doubt my hand's power. Please, please, you wouldn't, says Diana. Huh? Oh, I think I'm going to faint. For an instant, the Iron Hand is distracted, and that instant is all Diana Wonder Woman Prince needs. My mechanical hand, you severed it. She used her karate she learned in her own series to chop the metal hand off the guy. "Consider yourself lucky. I could have done that to your neck." And then she throws him with a judo flip. "Costume or not, you're still a wonder, Diana. Save the compliments for later, Batman. Right now, we need information. Talk, Iron Mouth. Tell us how to stop that colossal hand of yours, or I'll take you apart a bone at a time." "Do what you want, lady. It makes no difference now. The controls were in my shattered hand. I couldn't deactivate my creation now, even if I wanted to. We're doomed, you bloody fools. Everyone is doomed." Dr. Fate speaks up. "Perhaps not, villain. If the seven soldiers can recreate the weapon they built to destroy your earlier menace, the Nebula Man. Say, you soldiers, what can be done?" "It's a question of time," says Starsmile Kid. "The weapon itself is a lightning rod of sorts, gathering nebuloid energy from space and channeling it against the opposing nebula threat. But it takes time to charge completely, more time than we have." "You just built the nebula rod, kid." "You just build a nebula rod, kid. Let us worry about charging it," says Superman. "It's a deal. I'll get you a list of materials we need." The ticking of the clock is a staccato death knell as the greatest heroes of two worlds are put to the test. Swiftly, the genius of the Star Spangled Kid and his fellow soldiers of victory reconstruct the amazing nebula rod. Then, the completed weapon is given into the waiting hands of Superman to be carried into the endless depths of space. They are to be charged with the awesome energies of the universe. And at last, mankind's final hope of survival stands ready to use. The nebula rod must be delivered by hand into the heart of the menace. But that produces one major problem, for nothing human could survive the resulting explosion, says Crimson Avenger. "That's no problem. I'm enrolled with everything." "Ow!" "Everything save magic, Superman," Dr. Fate shows him. "Then I'll go. My power ring will protect me from the blast." So would mine. Why shouldn't I go?" The lanterns start to argue over it. "But neither of your rings will protect you from this. A yellow wooden arrow, a combination of both your weaknesses. Nor would Merlin's magic armor protect me from destruction." "Then what exactly can we do?" "Nothing. The problem has been solved for us." "What? The nebula rod is gone. And so is the Red Tornado." "Oh no, he couldn't have." "But he did. He took the nebula rod and left this note in its place." "What does it say, Batman?" asks Earth 2 Wonder Woman. Batman reads the note. "My friends, when you read this, it will be too late to stop me. I have taken the nebula rod and gone to face my destiny alone. You said nothing human could do what must be done and survive. Then perhaps I have a better chance than most. An android is not human. If I perish, all will be lost in some circuitry and gears. If I am successful, I will see you all soon. If I am not, remember me. Your friend, Red Tornado." That's all it says. "Maybe it's not too late. Maybe there's still time to help him," says Black Canary. And then there's a massive exploding, thunderous lightning sound. And the sounds of muffled weeping are lost amid the echoes of the blast. "I'm afraid nothing can help him now." And a short while later, "How did it go up there?" "They vanished, both of them, the nebuloid hand and Red Tornado. The force of the explosion must have torn each of them to atoms. All the times I put him down, considered him just a machine," says Our Man. "He was more a man than any of us." "I know how you feel, Iron Man. I lost a good friend, too," says Crimson Avenger as he consoles Iron Man. "And somehow, Red Tornado and Wing both know how we feel." And that, my friends, is the end, if you can believe it. Wrapped up pretty quickly, which isn't uncommon for many stories of the Silver Age. And while this is technically Bronze Age, it's the early part of the Bronze Age where things are still transitioning to the Silver Age storytelling, or the Golden Age storytelling style. But anyways, that's it. So you know what that means next, right? Next we get All-Star Comics 58, and I couldn't be happier to share that with everybody, because that was the idea for this show, is to go through the Bronze Age stories of the Golden Age. But like I said earlier, in every episode we had to set some context. So now we've seen Earth 2 introduced in The Flash, 123, we've seen the Justice Society come back in The Flash 137, We've seen the first crossover between the Justice League and Justice Society and Justice League's 21 and 22. And now we've had the three-part story of the return of the Seven Soldiers of Victory and Justice League 100 through 102, which is important because of the role that the Star-Spangled Kid is going to play in the upcoming Justice Society stories we're going to see. And that will be next issue. It's a comic book. Next issue. Come on. That'll be the next episode. First issue in the relaunch of All-Star Comics in the 70s, picking up from the original numbering and featuring the JSA in their own series for the first time since 1951. So please join me as Earth 2 gets its own title in the Bronze Age. Now go read some comics.